Podcast Dear Money listeners, welcome to today's show. I am so excited to welcome Leah Davis to our show. Leah is a wealth and wellness coach. Leah, prior to being a wealth and wellness coach, Leah was a financial advisor, a licensed financial advisor for 5 years before she pivoted into financial coaching or wealth coaching. And she has been doing that for the past 5 years. But for those 5 years and even into the present, Leah right now is dedicated to helping women of color build financial stability and enhance their wealth. I found Leah on Instagram, of all places. I stumbled upon her content and I just loved it immediately. And I followed her for a bit before I DM'd her, letting her know that I wanted to meet and just learn more. And within our first meeting, I was just so attracted to Leah's energy, her work, her message, and really how she talks people, her clients, through the challenges that come along with building wealth, and not just the challenge of actually getting the money, but the mental challenges that are ever present every day when it comes to building and keeping and maintaining your wealth. So, Leah, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to jump in with you.
I am happy to be here too. Thank you for having me. What an introduction.
Of course, you are worthy of such an introduction, the work that you do. But Leah, why don't you start? Tell us how you got here.
Yes, I would love to share that. My journey has been full of ups and downs, as we all experience, and unique to my path to how I got here is, I'm from the Bay Area, born and raised in San Jose, California. My father worked in construction. My mother stayed at home with his kids. And I grew up in a fairly low income household, and our family did not talk about money or finances or goals or anything. So I basically learned about money at that point from what I saw around me. And what I learned, which I now understand, was that my dad, who's in construction, so he would get money. And then when it was raining, he wouldn't be working and we'd be struggling. So it was feast and famine. And then when it was feast, money was there and he spent it. And then we enjoyed ourselves and then it was back down famine. So that right there is the key to my experience later on in life with money. And then as a young single mother, I was working at a semiconductor company in San Jose before it got super huge, known as Silicon Valley. It was on its way. And I was working there and I started seeing people have like nice cars. And I got this thing that was called a 401k, had no clue nothing about investing. So the guy that I was dating then told me to pick some stocks or whatever in this 401k. So I did. And then later on, fast forward, to my mid 20s, I started really thinking about how can I understand this money and how can I get my life to be like other people that I see around me? And I just started reading, and it was actually a Susie Orman book that I picked up. Can't remember the name of it, I was reading her book and I was also listening to Oprah Winfrey. She had this like debt diet program or something, Oprah's debt diet. And I had a little bit of credit card debt. And so between the two, I started learning. And then a friend of mine, her husband was a financial advisor. I didn't even know that's what he was. I just knew he worked with people with their money and he could help them. So I went and met with him. And I remember distinctly sitting in his office and he did this whole drawing on this board and I was confused. And I said, I just need life insurance. And so I got my first life insurance policy. I went back to him when I was unemployed and I was looking for work and I was approached by a firm and I learned about being a financial advisor. I thought I was just going to get licensed and I could really learn about money. So I'm going to do that. So yeah. I talked to him, got licensed, joined their firm. And that's where my career started as a financial advisor. So, and then a coach later on, after I was an advisor, because I wanted to serve women of color. And I realized soon after there wasn't enough materials or information. It's around 2011, 2012 for me to really be able to reach my market. And eventually I met my mentor, Sandra Davis of Sage Financial Solutions. She said, you would make a great financial coach. Okay, thanks. I have no idea much about coaching. And it wasn't until she had one of the individuals going through her certification program for the financial fitness coach certification. And she asked if I wanted to be coached. And I thought, I'll give it a shot. And it was during that time I was being coached with him I realized I had so much fear, anxiety, behaviors that I was not able to figure out even as an advisor, because I knew the things, but just because I knew it didn't mean I was actually going to implement. So that's how that happened. And later on, I decided I was going to become a coach and then combine my experience as a domestic violence advocate, wanting to serve women of color, got into coaching, and then I launched my business in 2019.
And that was that. Make
Yes.
it sound oh so simple.
With not through walk, there's plenty of ups and downs in between.
Growing up, it seems like money was kind of top of mind for you. Growing up in your house, was it a source of stress, negativity, or was it a source of kind of learning and positivity? Did your as much as your parents tried, did they act as those money mentors for you?
You know what's interesting? That's a no to both. So here's the other part to my story. I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. So I'm no longer left that when I was 16, thank goodness. However, that religion does not encourage people to go to college, to have a lot of money. It's a very oppressive type of culture. So my family, money was not, there was no conversation because it wasn't important. Do not, it's not important. That's, it was
Not like it was stressful. It was almost like non-existent. Like
non-existent.
it didn't matter. Oh,
It
that's
didn't matter.
interesting.
Yeah. So for me, I didn't have a relationship with it. It was something that it didn't matter until I became a young single mother and I was working. And then I'm thinking, this stuff's important.
It sounds like you were exposed. You were exposed to maybe some nicer things or different things than maybe you grew up with. And that's when you realized, oh, there's maybe a little bit to be had, right? Like,
Yes.
but there is money out there.
Yes. And I will say this though, now that we're talking about it, jogging my memory here. So the people that did have money, they were frowned upon. So,
In your household growing up,
in the culture that I
in
was
your
in,
culture.
household and within the community of the religion, right? So that's again being exposed to people who were affluent, and I'm thinking they're really kind people. Like they're not a bad, So that exposure again for me, it just was like, okay, this is not matching up for me here. And I'm a bit of a rebel. So, that's why I said I left religion. I was 16. I found my way out because it wasn't matching up for me there. So when things are not in alignment for me, I guess that's just part of my nature, which makes sense why I'm coaching.
I was just going to say that's what probably makes you just a fantastic coach to help people realize that and to not be afraid to explore it.
Exactly.
What I've learned with money and maybe also what I've experienced with money is people maybe go in either one of two directions, your direction where you kind of dive into exploration, but sometimes the other direction of burying your head.
There's that for me, and there was the burn in my head when I did know. So for me, because I didn't under, I had, now I understand it was the trauma around money and the experience with it and the not knowing. So for me, also, this is why it goes back, ties back into, I mentioned that I became a certified domestic violence advocate. So there was violence in our household growing up. So my way of coping as a child and then later in life when things were, I was activated and didn't know it, is I would put the blinders on. It's not happening. Just ignore it and it'll go away. So that was my coping strategy, which then carried into my behaviors around money.
You would just, whether it was spending too much, to your point, on a credit card or ignoring a bill that need to be paid or knowing your credit isn't where it should be, kind of just ignoring those things versus.
Absolutely. I remember when I was talking about how I was the Opus debt guy. I remember the bills were coming in and I would just put them to the side. I would just, they were piling up and I just, it was there, but I would act like it wasn't there, even though it was creating so much angst within me. I didn't know how to go work with those emotions at all. So my way again was to just act like it wasn't there. And put on, and again, this is so interesting because it ties into my childhood, which is, growing up and being very presentable and well-mannered, even though there's chaos in the household. So it's very much tied together.
So when you became a financial advisor, talk about that time in your life. How was that for you?
It was exciting and very eye-opening. And it was also difficult for me, back when I was studying and I was also pregnant with my second child as I was trying to get licensed. So it was something that I was like, I'm going to get licensed. And so I remember studying for that Series 7,
Yes.
pregnant, tired,
Hard test, very hard test.
very hard test. And I did fail it the first time around by like 2%, and I cried. I think I was like 7.5 or 8 months pregnant, and I went to got ice cream when I just ate ice cream on my couch. I was so depressed, but
Yes.
I had to have a baby. So later on, I picked up the books when my child's infant. So I joined the firm, and looking back now, it was difficult for me, but I didn't wasn't quite aware of it then like I would be now. I was the only woman in a small group of newer junior advisors at this independent firm. I was definitely the only woman of color. There was one woman in management there. And so, like I said, when I realized, okay, I'm supposed to get this market, what am I going to do? So I tried dental, I tried the doctors. I'm not vibing with it. I partnered up with another senior advisor and learning the ropes and trying to figure out find my path. And because being an advisor, large part of it is getting out, networking, and meeting people. I was attending a lot of events, and I naturally gravitated towards the networking events that were predominantly women. And I learned, started noticing there were business owners or professional women, and how, wait a minute, a lot of them look like me, or they're from the Bay Area. So it's a melting pot. And I began thinking, who's talking to these women? No one talks to me about this being a market where I was working. Even the broker dealer, nobody was saying this is a viable market. So when I brought it forward, I was told literally by my friend's husband, the one who got me into being an advisor at the firm. He told him I wanted to focus on women of color. And he said, are you sure that that's going to be, that's a limited market? You should do all women. And I looked at him, and I'm thinking, limited. There's so many of us. What do you mean? So just to get that feedback. And then later on, I joined another networking group, and it was for like Black women that had naturally curly hair. And I took over as a meetup group. And I took over this group, and I had over 300 members. I mean, that's right. So I started networking this group, running the meetings. And I remember telling the CEO at the firm, what I was doing, kind of reporting back. And he laughed and jokes to some of the guys are like, oh, Leah's going to some naturally curly haired group. So again, in that situation, I just was looking around thinking, okay. Then when I'm looking for materials, so the experience was one that I was excited, but I quickly realized that I was not going to be supported. And as an advisor building a business, you're on your own to build business. So it was really difficult for me, but I was also loving what I was learning.
It doesn't sound like, and maybe I'm wrong, but the way you're telling the story now, it doesn't sound like you ever questioned yourself though. Like
Absolutely.
when you went to your, to whoever that was, a boss or mentor, and he questioned you, seems like you were like, no, I'm pressing on here. Like this is where I feel my most authentic me. I love that. I
Yes.
love that.
Yes.
And that story right there, I mean, we can get into, women in a predominantly men's working workplace, but that story right there is where a lot of women would have said, oh, okay, well, what's a better market for me then? Or what should I do at that point? But you didn't. And I think that is just remarkable.
Well, that's another part of my personality. It's
The rebel
you're
comes out.
estimating me.
Yes,
Okay,
exactly.
now you feel
Now
me
I'm going to do it
out.
anyway, and I'm going to do it better. So thank you.
Yeah.
So, when you started to meet with these women of color as a financial advisor, what did some of that work look like for you?
It was, having very similar conversations to what I have now. Coaching's a bit different, of course, because it's more about behaviors and habits and understanding my clients. But back then, I was still naturally, I really wanted to get to know my clients. So I was asking questions that were to try to understand their story, what they understood about money, because I quickly realized in speaking to all the women that I was talking to that the guard would be up, or there would be a sense of timidness, or not really wanting to ask questions or shy about it, or and so I didn't know at that time that what I do now. So I was doing what I could in asking very heartfelt questions, and providing a lot of education. So it was a bit of a slow process, to just, and sometimes even getting them in there to talk could be difficult, because now I understand even more so, because there's, it's a male dominated industry. Also, when women of color working there are less. So, for my population that I was reaching out to, there was enough representation, and then the lack of trust. So trying to bring down that barrier in a conversation without being trained like I am now, it was not easy. And I had some successes, and then I had, not some very good ones that didn't work out.
Yeah, and to your point, everybody has a money story, or everybody has these built-in money values that, just like you don't know what you don't know, so you only know what you're taught. And all these women are bringing that forward with their conversations with you, which I would imagine is what caused them and me, right, when I have money conversations, to not know, because you're not thinking about what you don't know, or you're not, you don't want to face maybe some of the negative stories or feelings that you have about money, or that your parents had about money. And that makes having a conversation with an advisor or a coach difficult. So
Yes.
I could see how a lot of your work would focus on education at that time.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of education. And you're right, just the, and now as a coach, I tell my clients, my goal is to have them feel comfortable, confident, and courageous in meeting with a planner advisor and taking action and working, because, and I've seen amazing results with that. Because coaching and then navigating them onto that path.
Yeah, so let's make that transition. So, from your perspective, let's talk about the difference between what you do now and what a financial advisor would do.
What I do now is I do a lot more listening. So, when I meet with my clients, I'm asking more questions, listening. As an advisor, it would be ask questions in the beginning and then talk, 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 and tell you what to do. And as an advisor, it's provide me with your documents, bank statements, whatever we need, so that I can assess and figure out, how much insurance you may need, what retirement products, and then provide you with that recommendation.
Yes. As a financial advisor, you have to implement, right? You have to put them in the appropriate products.
Yes, exactly. Now, as a coach, I have conversations where I'm asking questions. And I'm asking the questions to find out from my clients, or I'm gauging what their knowledge is. I'm also asking them questions so that I can understand what a successful session would look like for them, because each client is unique. I meet them where they are. I do not provide any recommendations and tell them what to do, and I do not implement anything for them. My clients are given the agency to implement the work. So I don't give homework. I don't say, when you come back, we're going to review X, Y, and Z. If in a session with my clients, there's something that they want to address, maybe they want to build up their savings, or want to invest, and they're worried about, I don't know how to do this. Well, it's a conversation with them about what they would like to accomplish, how they want to do it, what action step they want to take between now and maybe the next session, or throughout the coaching engagement. And then we work together and brainstorm our solutions, and they come up with what they're going to do. And I'm there as an accountability, to ask, would you like any support? What barriers do you see? As an advisor, I'm not asking those questions. What barriers do you, an advisor, to my experience, I was not asking the question of, okay, so you have your budget, and you said you want to work on it so you can kind of understand your cash flow. So a question that I wouldn't have asked an advisor is, when would you work on your budget? What's the most convenient place for you? Do you foresee anything that could come up to get in the way? What solutions would be available for you to help you move this forward? As an advisor, that's not the conversation. So for me, as a coach, that's the kind of conversations that I have with my clients. So it's really getting clear about what their desired outcome is. So if somebody has a goal, I mean, as a coach, I may have my coaching sessions with them. They're average between about 6, maybe max to 12 of the coaching sessions. If somebody wants to buy a house, that's not going to typically happen within that time period. So we do talk about that and what their desired outcome is in having that homeowner, being a homeowner. So maybe somebody says, I want to have a home because it's important to me that I have a stable home so I can help my aging parents and care for them, because that's something I'm going to be responsible for. In doing that, that'll bring me peace of mind, and I'll have a lot of joy spending that time with my family. So we focus on the sessions of how can they have peace of mind today and joy today versus waiting until then.
Okay.
And peace of mind and joy as they're working on their finances.
As they work towards it. And that helps with manifestation as well, which is a whole separate show. But tell us about the type of person, the typical client that will seek out a financial coach. What is it? I know, and I agree, everyone is so unique. So do your best. But is it... What's a typical goal or that people are struggling with?
The typical one that I get is, I just want to manage my money better. That in itself has a whole slew of different things of what that means.
I could totally put myself in that camp.
Yes, it could be, I've had such a variety of individuals coming, but that is typically the biggest one. And also women are very aware that come to ready to coach. And most common in my intake form, it'll say something like, I want to have a better relationship with money. I'm carrying a lot of shame with money. Money scares me. And I don't quite know why. I want to understand. And I know this is affecting me, but I not quite clear. And this is my goal. So that's typically what I'm seeing. I've had some clients come forward and wanting to work with me because they just want to be educated and learn. And they want to understand what, personal financial management is. I'm saying that to you. And that's not what they're saying in the intro, but that's really what it is, what their personal financial management is and how they can best create that for themselves, because there's so much information out there and they're overwhelmed with how is this supposed to help me and how do I fit this into my experience. And so that's what I see as a common theme with the women that I've been coaching.
I love that you mentioned, and I'm not surprised you mentioned it, relationships with money. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a topic we talk about often enough in the personal finance space. Tell us about what that means to you. What does your relationship with money mean to you? How do you explain it to your clients?
Well, I want to hear what their relationship is with money, what it means to them. So I'll be asking the questions on what they are experiencing now and what they want to have in the future, or what it was in the past. Where are they? How satisfied with what they're experiencing right now? So a relationship with money could be, for someone, it could be it's daunting. It's like that. Or it could be for somebody else, it's that horrible ex-boyfriend.
It doesn't go away,
right? So it really, again, I don't give, my opinion to them what relationship of money is, asking the questions and drawing it out, because again, I want to meet my client where they're at. Yeah. So that if there's any areas that they want to explore or improve upon or remove, then that's something that's a part of the conversation that we have.
Yes. So typically relationships are just like any relationship is built over time. It's a set of beliefs about money that's built over time. And I love it when anybody can recognize within themselves when a relationship is not where it should be, when a relationship is not serving you, and whether that's a physical relationship or relationship with money. If you know that your relationship with money is negative for whatever reason, daunting is a good word. I hear ever present, like it's just always there, always a topic. It's wonderful to be able to have a resource like you to talk through that. Yeah. And do you find that after those 6 or 12 sessions, your clients are in a different space with that relationship?
Absolutely. I mean, I have clients within their first session. And what's interesting too is I love this because, it's part of the coaching, people, it's like this, like, what does a coach do? How is this going to help me? But this is what I want to work on. I do have some contracts right now where I am coaching some community members at nonprofits. I want to give an example of like a client of mine too. She owns multiple daycare centers, and she schedules her session because she's part of this nonprofit. And this is something like a perk they're getting as being a community member. And so she had no idea what coaching was. And so she came forward wanting to coach with me, and she started talking about she wants to retire. She's in her 50s, and she's saying, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, and talking about retirement. And then it came up again, her relationship with money. And so in that first session, at the end of it, she just was blown away. And she said, Leah, I had no idea what to expect. I didn't even know that we would be talking about this, because she had no, she wanted to retire, but the conversation came up about her rates that she's charging her clients. And was she wanted to raise her rates. And so in that, she said something key to me. She said, yeah, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to figure out how much I'm going to raise my rates. But, you know, I might just change it. And she's going to lower it. And when I asked her about it later on, and that's what she typically does. And so in that conversation, she walked away feeling very powerful, like, I'm going to raise my rates. And then when we met again, the second session, she had, you know, with the next month, she increased her rates, and she had increased her revenue about $91,000 for the year just by doing that. And she wouldn't have before.
Yep.
And so in that one session, she'd already increased her revenue. So sometimes it can be the first session, third, fifth session, but definitely there is a significant change in the relationship with money.
And it sounds like the coaching, you know, getting people through these behaviors, right? In this particular example, she clearly had some sort of mental block stopping her from raising her rates, which I'm sure you helped her through. But that ended up being a pretty substantial sum of money.
Yes.
That she was able to get back. I mean, that's no joke. That's a lot of money.
You're
just by having the power to make that one change. That's just amazing.
Yes. Yes. And she's also somebody who, like, she didn't know much. She said, there's so much information. I don't know what to do. She'd never even heard about financial planners. So I went through that. You know, that's one part that I do with all my clients is I provide the information on the difference between a planner, advisor, coach, a counselor, or financial therapist. We're all out here. And so now she's scheduling appointments to meet with a financial planner, and she still has 3 more sessions out of her. She got 10, but she just started coaching with me a few months ago. And, you know, it's just quite amazing for me to see this and to see her just feeling so much more comfortable. And I heard you say something, you know, it's a mental block with, you know, raising her rates. It was mental, but it was also physical. So that's something that I work on with my clients too. So as I'm working with my clients, I will ask a question like, where, you know, I can hear it in the voice. I can tell demeanors and there's something coming up for them. And I'll just ask a question, where are you feeling this right now in your body? And for her, it was her chest.
Yep.
She had no clue that that was her body signal letting her know that she was not feeling safe in that moment and was very uncomfortable. And it was then recognizing that, and she then started working on that. So then as that came up, when she was working on her cash flow for her business, she had a plan, a place to comfort herself and to be able to navigate through and to have that awareness. And that's key to make that mind-body connection.
Yeah, that's key. I feel it in my stomach and my gut.
Yeah,
when me too. I have to do certain things with finances, not everything, but there are certain things. And there are days where that feeling will stop me from taking the action that I know I need to take. So
I
see that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it shows up. And I've had clients say, I feel tingling all over my skin. Some is their shoulders, their head, their stomach, their chest.
Yeah.
It's a variety of experiences and how it shows up and the way that feels. Some people they can't even describe it. They don't really know, but then throughout the sessions, they start to uncover and notice it because they're having this awareness of, okay, when I'm doing these certain things, I'm experiencing something in my body and I'm responding a certain way. And that's a big part, core part of the work that I do with my clients, because we can think all the things we want, but especially for women and women of color, we experience trauma in our life. And a lot of us, myself included, may not recognize how that's showing up and affecting our ability to, you know, make financial decisions that are sound or what make us habits on the path that we want to be on. And so by making that connection and exploring that, now I'm not a therapist at all. You know, I definitely don't go down that path. It's a very light touch in these conversations. I don't, you know, if someone is too uncomfortable to want to go there, I don't force anything. I just lean on my clients and they go where we go throughout those conversations. But making that connection and having that awareness is absolutely huge. And it just flows outside beyond just even the finances. It's helpful in the rest of their life and everything we do.
You got it. It seems like it's a practice for any type of triggering moment, no matter what it is, the awareness and how to cope with that and work yourself through it. Mm-hmm. Leah, do you see any generational differences with the clients you work with, or do you see a variety of generations in your work?
I do see a variety of generations, not much of a difference.
Okay.
You know, I'm seeing, you know, I have clients who are in their 50s and they're in the sandwich generation, right? You know, got aging parents starting to take care of them, and then kids, maybe grandkids, and then even young professionals, they're still feeling that pressure of sandwich generation because they may be, you know, their parents may have been immigrants, or their parents, you know, they know they're going to take care of their parents a little more, and they may have kids. They may be the first gen. So it's still, I'm noticing for myself, there's some common themes that are still present for those who are in the 50s and those who are in their early 30s.
Yeah, no matter what the age.
Yeah.
That's scary to think about a little bit is how, you know, a 20-something can have the same worries and fears as a 50 or 60-year-old.
Yes, yes. And so also for the women that are coaching who are women of color, I said first gen earlier. I may have some clients who are in their 50s and they're first gen in their family to have graduated high school, or first gen to start a business. And it's the same thing for those in their 30s. I had some clients in their 20s, so the first gen to go to college, or the first gen to make as much money as they do. And there's that added pressure, a sense of responsibility of being the provider for everyone in the family while walking through the world as a woman and on as a woman of color. So so many different layers here, but again, there's still that common theme that I'm seeing within the different age groups.
Yeah, that's a question. And we only have a few minutes left, but that's a topic that I'm always interested in, is we always talk about not having enough and how you kind of cope through that. But do you ever come across clients who are doing really well, and that's bringing up a whole host of other feelings in them? Whether it's, how do I continue to do well? How am I going to support my family? Now there's all these expectations, like that almost fear of success. Does that come up for you?
Kind of. I do. The majority of my clients are doing really well. So even though I'm speaking of the behaviors, I've had most of my clients are either working in tech or they're in management positions, and they just simply don't know how to navigate their finances. But I haven't really had clients too worried about success. The ones that tend to be drawn to coaching with me, they absolutely say, I want to, you know, completely shift my family's dynamic, and I want to be making sure that there's wealth passed on, and I'm doing whatever it takes to get there. So I haven't seen that too much in my practice.
Yeah. And I think you hit it, what I meant more of that. It doesn't mean, you know, once you have, just because you're making money, it doesn't mean you know what to do with it.
Exactly.
And I think that's a big myth as well, is that, you know, the more money you have, it's just easier to manage. And that's not always the case.
Right.
Decisions become more sophisticated, but also your behaviors can change as well. So I think you hit it exactly on the head.
That's right.
Well, Leah, this has been amazing. And I'm so grateful for the work that you do, because money is complicated and money runs deep, deep within all of us. And I appreciate you bringing a lot of these really tough subjects to light.
I am so glad we had this conversation. Thank you for having me. It was an honor to be here, and I love this topic. So anytime, I'm available to have this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. Everybody listening, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please go ahead and rate us 5 stars, please. Leah is phenomenal, and we will talk soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Money. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Every little bit helps. You can also follow us on our Instagram at Barnum Financial Group. If you're interested in connecting or working with a financial advisor at the Barnum Financial Group, the links are in the show notes of this episode.
All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions their respective parent companies or affiliates or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated. Investments or strategies mentioned in this program may not be suitable for you, and you should make your own independent decision regarding them. This material does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. You should strongly consider seeking advice from your own investment advisor. Securities and investment advisory services offered through qualified registered representatives of MML Investor Services, LLC. Member SIPC, 6 Corporate Drive, Shelton, Connecticut, 06484, telephone number 203-513-6000.